to a very, very special 8-4 Play podcast. Your only home for talk about Japan and games and Japanese games.
Is it now?
It is. And I am your host for the time being.
Oh.
Mark Gaming Jesus McDonald. You have joined us on a special training day episode, and in the hot seat, as it were, is J.J. Boom Epperson.
Boom.
That's right, because it's training day.
Oh, it's training day. Yes. Ah, I see.
And what that means is, some people got that.
I got that. It's a good gif.
What that means is that I'm going to be gone for the next 2 weeks.
Yes.
Two podcasts. 4 weeks. And in my place, doing his best, as he does, is going to be JJ.
Yes.
And we've gotten some complaints, to be honest.
Hey.
I've gotten some complaints.
No more than we usually get.
We've gotten some compliments.
Yes.
But I think they feel sorry because they see the complaints, so they said compliments.
No.
I think they kind of feel sorry
people
for
genuinely, like
what's the ratio?
I'd say probably 2-1 complimentary.
This is a lie. Okay. That's not a lie. That's true.
I was lying that is for, true. For your sake. But like the people on the message boards, I was trying to puff you up and give you a little self-confidence, JJ.
I have all the self-confidence.
You sound like it.
And the radio voice and everything. But we all know it's in you. It's just a matter of bringing out that inner special JJ.
It's like a really good Lifetime special.
Yes.
Yep.
Yep. See, all right, we're starting to get there.
All right,
we're
and so why don't we go ahead and start off?
Yeah, so are you ready? So one weak point that I think we've identified is nicknames.
Right.
Nicknames has been a perennial, like, I feel like you're super solid on the news, you're pretty good in the games, but I think the nicknames is a weak point, so sure. I want to go through the process here.
Okay.
And maybe the listeners will get a little taste, a little behind-the-scenes action in the process, but...
Can I give an excuse at the beginning? We've been really busy.
This is true.
And part of the reason probably why I'm doing this podcast is because you've been extremely busy and I've been extremely busy.
I wouldn't.
Everybody's been extremely
confirm
busy.
Confirm or deny that fact.
So I didn't have much time to do these.
But people on the podcast have heard that we say that almost every episode.
Yeah.
Yes. But I think more than usual.
True.
Yes.
That is true.
Yes. Okay, let's just go ahead.
I'm ready for some awesome start.
Yeah, me
nicknames
too.
So Mark Gaming Jesus, I didn't
That's
even
right.
try there.
Good. Good for you.
That's not good. That's
yeah, lame. You're supposed to give Mark a nickname.
See, keep moving on.
Damned if I do, damned if I don't.
Keep moving, JJ.
John, look at my Amiibros. Ricciardi.
What?
Amiibos?
Amiibros, because he called them Amiibros.
They're my
on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay.
But there was like newer stuff out there that he's been collecting.
Oh God, jeez!
Yeah,
you know, I've been so wrapped up.
I was wondering where you were gonna go with that.
I was so wrapped up in the Amiibo.
I'm gonna hit my little my driver's ed emergency brake.
Go ahead
and say. So
ironically, topical considering we just got a car, but keep going.
So yeah, and maybe we'll talk about that when you're trying to kill time in two episodes. Come after this, but you know the Amiibo thing. It wasn't that it was bad, but it was
hold on. Are we seriously doing this?
It's a little too on the nose. Mm-hmm. So like Amiibo or something like that.
Okay.
Like you could have gone a little.
All right.
There you go.
But
I'm gonna write notes.
Yeah, yeah.
Amiibos. But the most obvious thing to talk about, is the fact that you know John's bought in the last 2 days 40 of these things of canned coffee.
Well, this was gonna also kind of be Thomas's our new intern.
Oh, okay.
Thomas's.
If you're saving it for him.
Well, yeah.
Okay, carry on.
All right.
Carry on.
All right.
I won't.
Well,
I won't explain the rest of that until you get to.
You're
him.
Not going
to
be. Amiibo. You're not going to be too happy about that.
It
either.
Is, John.
And pull out into the.
Hiroko Hashi Minamoto.
Okay.
Or 8-4. I was just going to call you 8-4.
Okay.
Because you go ahead and explain.
This is pretty bumpy.
This is like
okay.
total.
Right.
I'm gonna have nightmares.
No, you're doing fine.
Okay, let's work on this together.
Yes, come on.
You're doing fine.
So, mm-hmm. You went to a good friend of the show,
yep.
Chokan, who used to head up Sarugakucho, which was a testing company.
Game tuning company.
Yeah, game tuning mm-hmm. testing.
And before that, worked at Mario Club.
Mario Club, the famed. Mario Club, right?
Yes,
which is the Nintendo internal evaluation, which still exists.
Yes.
Unless I'm...
Mm-hmm.
Those crazy new Super Mario videos where they're doing all sorts of tricks and stuff, those are all recorded at Mario Club.
Mario Club, okay.
Yeah.
And I think, didn't they used to... scorer games, and maybe they still do.
Way back in the day, that was the story anyway, was that they would evaluate games with numbers.
Zelda was like an 85 or something.
Yeah, they weren't
the highest thing they'd ever given, and it was an 85. I mean, they were super harsh.
Yeah.
On their own things, which is kind of interesting. I'd love to see those.
I think
internal
they don't do that anymore, or at least that's what the people have said, but they still exist as like a testing thing. Iwata talks about them, and Iwata asks a lot.
I think that's where I saw them mentioned recently.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
so friend of the show,
Chokan, he decided that one day he would
rip off our name.
No, that's not the story.
Oh, okay, sorry.
That's not the story, Mark.
Let's let Hiroko tell.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so he decided to open a restaurant, and it's in Shibuya.
Mm-hmm.
Hashi is the name of the place because his name is Hashimoto.
Yes.
And Hashi means chopstick. And he wanted to make a restaurant that you enjoy food. Like, you could go, it's like you go for your mother's food kind of place.
Mm-hmm. Home cooking
place.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Hashi is the name of the place. And, well, ha is like the sound for hachi,
yes,
which means eight, the number eight in Japanese. She stands for four
mm-hmm.
in Japanese. And so...
death.
He decided to name his restaurant 84, and that's where...
Well, 84,
84,
I guess, but...
That's where
it's true. There's
marks.
No dash in between the 8 and the 4,
it's,
at least.
Yeah, it's not exactly
I will
same
say, name. Though, it's and a pretty it's, creative name, to consider all things considered.
Yeah,
it's a creative name if someone else didn't think of it.
Well, okay. Like, he came to me first, and he asked for permission.
To be fair,
and say, like, if it's okay or not. And, I mean, there's no reason for us to... be like, no, you can't do that. So, you know, he named his restaurant 84.
Mm-hmm.
We are 84, and we're good friends. We're
do
still
we
good
get
friends.
Any sort of residuals from this
free
restaurant?
Meals, maybe.
Yeah, when we go in,
well, I was in the special thanks. It was
she
only
is in
me.
The very high up in special thanks. Actually, though,
let's get special thanks.
So here's the thing that's interesting, probably much more interesting than the history of its name. I think to people who listen is that it's this guy like knows. Everybody in the gaming industry mm-hmm. in Japan, like, and I mean everybody. He introduced me and Hiroko to like Iwata, like we like at a party. Like he's mm-hmm. like that level of knows everybody, and he basically had a whole bunch of people in the industry like make stuff for his restaurant. So like, for example, there's like a painting on the wall of Pikachu like holding the logo of his restaurant from the guy who
holding a bowl of rice.
Yeah, bowl of rice with the logo
with
and everything.
Chopsticks.
And there's like mm-hmm. Miyamoto drew something for his restaurant.
Aonuma's doing something for him. That's in the works too. Hip Tanaka's doing something for him. That's in the works too.
So it's kind
like,
of like
a bunch
of
people.
It's kind of like a video game museum of like mm-hmm. amazing. Like it's like Milky would have. This is where Milky goes when he dies and goes to heaven. Like it's like
right.
this awesome signed stuff.
Of the show.
And we saw Inafune, Keiji Inafune's. Signed.
Yeah, there's like a framed like Rockman inbox, like perfect shape with
right,
like
with,
Mega Man's picture next
to
it.
And with copyright. Copyrighted as Capcom.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
wow. That was
copyright
funny.
Symbol.
Yeah.
And it's also like this super hidden layer, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's also not just like, hey, I'm going to stroll in. I listen to the 8-4 Play podcast.
No, you will never find it unless he tells you.
And also,
where
you
it
have
is.
To know Chokan to be able to even. Go into the place.
It's not like for the public. It's more like for like friends of Chokan.
So you'll never get to go.
But it is like a game industry like thing. So we were there and we like sat down and the guy next to us at the next table was Masuda-san, the guy who like is the director of
Junji
Pokemon.
Masuda.
Like,
yeah.
And like, you know, two tables down was like the King of Games people and stuff. It's just like all mm-hmm. game industry people basically. So it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right, JJ, all right. What you got?
Well, next we got Roy, the Azorian mixologist.
Ah.
Blakely?
should I explain that, or do we want to rip JJ apart first?
Well, maybe we have to understand it first before we can know to rip
I know
apart.
That it has something to do with Final Fantasy, right?
But
right.
You know, one good thing is that we didn't understand it right away, so that might mean it's a
you bought yourself
better...
a little bit of time.
Mark, how is that nickname on the EGM scale?
Well, I need to know what it is.
Okay, well, over the weekend, I went to the Final Fantasy 14 cafe in Akihabara.
Yeah.
And it's more like, you know, I went to the Pokemon cafe. This is a very much more adult version where mm-hmm. there's like you can actually get booze.
Really?
Like, well, no.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
You know, booze themed after summons or job classes or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I had
does
like
it, is it like
four...
15-minute wind-up for them to deliver your drink when you order
right.
the drink based on a
does
summon?
Some cosplayer come out and like...
No. No.
No?
Nothing that,
okay.
awesome,
not that awesome,
unfortunately.
Did you get a Bahamut or anything like recognizable to people like casual?
I got an Odin.
Okay.
Odin nice. Was good. It was like tonic and grape syrup and vodka.
Okay, what makes right. that an Odin exactly?
It had a little sword in it.
Oh, okay. Well, now you're
yep.
talking.
Yep.
Now you're talking. So what is JJ's, the meaning of JJ's lame nickname?
Well, Eorzea is the name of the world that 14 takes place in.
Yes.
It's okay. also the name of the cafe.
All right.
And mixology, I guess, because I had cocktails.
Yeah, in class.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I see where you're going with that.
Yeah.
Final EGM score.
Well, I here's the constructive criticism, JJ.
All right, go ahead. I'm sorry, JJ.
You had the right idea. You are on the right path.
Yes.
It's just, you're like right on the nose each time. Like it's like literal, you know what I mean? Where it's
okay.
like just one step removed. But you,
just a little scent of
that's good. You did some research there. I could tell.
Definitely.
You put in the work.
I'm writing this down one step removed.
Yeah. All
right. But I think this was better than the other one.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right.
And so after now we got our guests today. We got
yes, the guest of honor.
The guest of honor.
Yes. We've been sandbagging this because we haven't mentioned him at all yet, and he's been very quiet. Biding his time over in the corner. Thank you.
I didn't want to get creative with this one because I feel like he's got an established name out there. So
I would have done the
so
same, probably.
Adam, Gaijin Hunter, / the monster we've created.
Oh.
Right. Nice.
Nice. Zinger on the end there.
How about that with the monster we created? It's pretty good.
That is correct.
Yeah. It's not like a nickname per se, but it's
so,
not bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay. So yeah, so Gaijin Hunter, which... If you didn't know what that was, you might think... Well, you're probably listening to this podcast because you're interested in video games.
Yes.
Polygon got it wrong for what it's worth, what it means. Did you see the article?
I know, but I do like I thought it was kind of nice. Like,
what did they say it meant? They said Gaijin
Hunter.
They
said, well, if you're new to Gaijin Hunter, then you're a Gaijin. You're a foreigner.
All right, they said you're a foreigner.
To
and that's why
Hunter,
he's...
So since I'm so nice, I guess, to people who are new to the series, Gaijin Hunter must mean... Welcome, Gaijins, to being hunters.
Uh-huh.
That's how it is.
Okay.
What I always thought it meant, and I guess you could tell me if I'm wrong, but I always thought Gaijin Hunter just meant because you live in Japan and you're basically like Honky who plays
yes.
Monster Hunter,
yeah,
you are
yeah.
the Gaijin Hunter.
Honky Hunter was
exactly.
taken, the
yeah.
YouTube channel. It's very popular.
Funny enough, Gaijin Hunter is also like a very well-known term in Japan
mm-hmm.
for someone
women.
Who...
For women who
girls who go
who
after
exactly.
foreign
exactly.
guys.
That's what I'm
foreigners.
Saying. That's
yeah.
where I was going with this
yeah.
whole thing.
See, that's what I... know.
And like when you search on YouTube for Gaijin Hunter, all sorts of videos
oh, yeah.
that aren't about Monster Hunter.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Different kind of hunting.
Yeah.
One quick aside here, JJ.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm just saying, I would have waited with the guest of honor to put him last because we're going to talk about Monster Hunter for about a half an hour.
Wait a minute. I just introduced him because you were like the guest of honor.
No,
you
no,
said
no,
special
no,
guests.
No. Yeah, you
no,
said that.
We have two special guests.
He was looking over here. When he
said Wait, really?
Oh.
Yeah.
You have to fuck it up. But Tomas is going to be a regular.
Yeah, but he's a special guest. This is his first time.
But he's, well, all right. I mean, nothing against...
France has already been disgraced.
I know.
But a special guest is usually reserved for people who are outside of the family and...
I see.
You know.
Well, he's special because it's his first time.
Okay. Well,
okay.
This is a special day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A special day for a soon-to-be regular voice on the podcast. You might have recognized his voice from me doing my stellar French accent
yes.
Before now. But now we have a real...
Yes.
Frenchman.
Finally, we
house.
Have a real
not like Jon Snow, not the counterfeit
no, not these
Canadian
fake
friends. Friends. Yeah,
nope.
Knockoffs. This is real deal, straight
yeah.
out of France.
Wannabe. So yeah, JJ, what's the nickname?
So no, it's not good. But it was like basic. It was
oh, come on, like
you can do that every time.
Sell it.
Yeah.
Go.
We want to see your confidence.
Bullshit. Just go.
All right, it's Thomas.
Yep.
Hero of the day.
Rebo.
Rebo.
Why hero of the day?
Because John apparently looked all over town for these coffee cans.
Yeah.
Nobody could find them.
Uh-huh.
And Coffee Boss.
Coffee Boss. There you go. Well, it's Dido, though. Boss, it's not Boss.
Coffee. I know, but... You're getting way right too on the nose. I know.
Let's
be literal.
Let's move on. So there are these coffee cans, limited edition coffee cans, that they sell at convenience stores, and it's that just came out last week.
Demitasse.
That's one of two. There's actually two of them, but we've never gotten the other one, yeah.
John, how many convenience stores and grocery stores did you look at?
In the first day that it was out, I checked 15 convenience stores and 3 supermarkets, and wow, none of them mm-hmm. had the cans.
And I think it was like Tuesday, he sent Thomas out in and around Shibuya. And Thomas, yep, how many convenience stores did you go to?
I checked around, 10? 10, wow. 12 wow.
So like maybe like 27 altogether.
This is the first day. Yeah.
Couldn't find a damn thing.
Mm.
Work, you know, finishes. Thomas, like on a whim, goes to a convenience store near his house and like hits the mother load.
Jackpot.
Yes.
Yep.
Twice. It went back the next day for us, which is pretty kind.
And you come in to work the next day. How many cans did you have?
About 15.
15. Yes. So we had 15, and then we got some more. How many do we have altogether?
Altogether, we have around 40? 30.
30 fucking coffee cans. Nobody's ever going to drink these.
Now, it's a secret what we're going to do with them.
Yes, it is a secret what we're doing. We're not hoarding them.
Nobody's going to drink them all and die.
Let's talk about the toys. So you can Dorito it and see what these things look like. But basically,
they're actually pretty cool.
Yeah. It's a mini can of coffee. It's a mini coffee can, which you see these all around Japan. But probably the closest thing in the West would be the little mini cans of sodas and stuff they used to have. Do they still have those?
Yeah. They're like party-sized Coca-Colas.
Party-sized, yeah. I love those things as a kid. But these are even smaller than those. And the top of it, there's like a cap on top of it. It is a green, semi-transparent cap. And then inside it is a little figure, the pixel graphics figure, but a 3D from Super Mario Brothers.
Yep.
And there's eight of them. Ones.
Yeah.
And what you do is the green cap is actually like turns into a warp pipe, right? You flip it over.
Turn it over and it becomes a pipe, and then the like little figure has a little black stand with like a little peg sticking up, you know, like figures tend to do, and you put the figure on the stand and then the stand in the pipe, and then it looks like the character's like basically standing on top
of
the
pipe. It's like a little like a you know, suitable for show.
Yeah,
JJ, as you might put on a mantle, as one might put on their mantle
on your fireplace.
Yes, suitable for displaying. Yeah, in the you know the mantle, the dinner table, have you. But
it's a weird thing about Japan when these like they have these promotions because you know convenience stores are everywhere here.
Yes.
There's probably tens of thousands of them in Tokyo alone. Like they're everywhere, but like you'll go all over the place for something and not find it. The same thing happened with those frozen chuhais we had on the show over the summer.
Yeah.
Kyle, like
I
friend of the show,
four bump.
Kyle McLean, was like the only guy who could find them. So he got like and he went to the same one store like 3 days in a row, just like Thomas did with these, and just got like 20 of them. And now I have them like they've lasted me through the winter because of like just that one store. This is the same thing. We haven't seen them anywhere else.
Right.
Yeah.
But so, they're really cool.
Well, here's a trick in case you didn't know it. If it's at a 7-Eleven here, you can actually order like boxes.
Really?
Seriously, I've done it a few times. And they
dangerous,
apparently.
Dangerous.
But they're hooked in with the entertainment industry, so there's always like collaborations going on, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So there's a lot of people who work for the company who made it who want to order like a box or two. So if you go in there saying, hey, can I order 2 boxes of that?
Uh-huh.
Then usually they're more than happy to order it for you.
So how do you know this? Because you buy like you ask them for all the Monster Hunter stuff when it comes out.
I've done that, and also, and also through work we had some collaboration stuff, and I wanted to get some for like marketing team, and I go in there and it's like, can I order 2 boxes of that? And they're like, yeah, sure.
Wow.
Where were you?
They'll even give you like POs and everything if you need that to like expense it out or whatever.
Wow.
We needed this information back when they had the Pepsi. Remember the Pepsi bottle caps?
Oh, yeah.
Mario bottle caps, mm-hmm. which was a huge thing. How many of those were there? Like
30.
30 different ones.
And I had them all. Yep, thanks to her.
And you had to buy them off of Yahoo Auctions.
She bought them off the street.
There was a liquor shop close to my company, my office, and they just happened to have it, and they even like had it outside of the bag.
Oh, so really? you could pick which one.
Yeah,
those things are still pretty cool.
They're a lot like this actually, the design, because they do the same thing. They have 2D graphics but in like sort of 3D pixels.
They look exactly like those voxels.
It's kind of like voxels.
Cool. So coffee talk. So yeah, so now that everybody has been introduced, JJ.
Yes, so why don't we talk about what we've been playing?
Yeah.
There's two key games we're going to talk about.
Destiny.
No,
Monster Hunter, right.
Monster Hunter,
yeah,
okay.
I almost forgot.
But actually, there was one more game. Oh. I think it's a little thing called like The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask.
Oh, that Ooh. Thing? Yeah. Okay, I guess we could talk about that.
We can talk about
if
that.
If there's time.
How about we talk about it now so we can spend as much time as we want on Monster Hunter?
Sure.
So I have been playing it. Roy, no, nah. You haven't been playing it. John, you played a little bit. And Thomas,
yeah, I've been playing
you it. Have been playing it. And for me and Thomas, this is our first time.
Yeah.
I owned a Nintendo 64, and I played through Ocarina when it first came out. But for some reason, I didn't get Majora's Mask. I think I had moved on to another
system at
that point.
Played that game like 4 times and had never finished it.
Got really?
To the final dungeon. Didn't finish it, and then friend of the show, Shane Bettenhausen, showed me the ending like in 2004 or something, and I was like, I really? Like, this is weird. Even for that game.
Yeah. Which is,
we're not going to spoil anything, but the ending is weird.
So
the whole game is weird.
It is.
And
in
amazing.
A great way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a great way. And actually, I think, just to preface this before you get into it, I mentioned this on Twitter, but I've been super happy to see the reviews and all of the buzz and everybody be so positive about it. They definitely did make some changes that I want to talk about to the old game, because at its core of the game, the old game was great, but it definitely had some rough edges. Mm-hmm. Some good rough edges, but also like some bad rough edges. But I think the interesting thing to me was like, you have to go back to that time, and what was that, like 2000?
Yeah.
You have to go back to that time and remember where like the state of 3D Zelda was at the time. So like the formula was not set then, right?
No.
Like, there had just been Ocarina of Time in 3D.
Right.
And that was it. So it was kind of like, you know, after Mario 64, it's kind of like, okay, well, I don't know. What do we do next? And there's, like, tons of history out there on the web and stuff you can find about, like, you know, Uda Zelda and the kind of where it came out of. There's a good Iwata's Ask.
Yeah.
Iwata Asks as well. But I think the fact that the next few Zeldas, you know, there was Wind Waker, yeah. But, like, the next few Zeldas, like, you kind of got to know, oh, okay, this is what the formula is for, like, a 3D Zelda.
Right.
And we talked about this on the show before. I think people have started to get kind of tired of that.
Yes.
And so now, people are so ready for, like, something new and different that I think Majora's Mask now is appreciated more than it was back then because time has passed and more games that are maybe better games in a lot of ways came out, but that they were so similar to each other and they like improved in a predictable way, besides like Wind Waker's graphics, which were pretty
people like when they break the since day one of Zelda 1, like, I think I've always appreciated when they break the formula. That's probably why you and I like Zelda 2 so much, and like this was like the Zelda 2, you know, in a way, of that era, right? Because, like, you know, it looks the same as Ocarina
of
Time, but
like
the game, the inner gameplay is just so dramatically different and interesting and
experimental.
For sure.
Time idea, you know, I mean, yeah, the controls are all Zelda, the dungeons are really good Zelda dungeons, but they are Zelda
so
dungeons.
Good.
The bosses, I guess one of the changes they've made is they actually went and changed a bunch of the bosses, which I thought was interesting.
Really tweaked the bosses,
yeah.
Definitely read the Iwata Asks. There's lots of good nuggets in there about, like, you know, the kinds of changes they made for the remake and why.
The Bomber's Notebook is way more useful, and that was actually a really smart move, because they had this really tough job of, and even saying that Iwata Asks, of not making it easier. Like, don't make the game easier, but they wanted to make it more friendly. Like, it sounds contradictory, but it's kind of not. Like, the Bomber's Notebook, I guess you could argue in a way, makes the game easier, but more it's just keeping track of the stuff that the game is kind of throwing at you. I guess they give you access to a song of, like, halftime or double time earlier or something?
I haven't gotten it yet. I'm only on the first dungeon, so.
Okay, well, so, and enough about us who've already played the game before. This was both of your guys' first time?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's like, it's my first time, but I know enough about the game to, like, I wasn't going in blind. So I knew about the day-night thing.
Yeah.
I knew the general premise of it, and I knew that you can change characters and stuff like that. But this is, like, my first time actually getting into it. I didn't know how I would take to the whole day, like the three-day thing,
yeah.
repeating thing. I think it's pretty cool. One thing I would this today during lunch, I spent some time playing a dungeon. I was on the last day. It's 3 days.
Is it the first dungeon?
The first dungeon.
Okay. Yeah.
3 days, and I was on. I probably had two-thirds of the last day left.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, I've got this dungeon. Let's see if I can actually beat it in the time that I have left in the day or whatever.
Right.
And so I'm like just playing like the best I can at Zelda. Like I'm solving puzzles left and right and doing all this stuff. And I'm just like, yeah, I could do this. And like it becomes like almost like a speed run, almost like a race against this clock. Well, I mean, it is
it's
a race against the clock.
It's an added element, right?
Yeah. But yeah, it like gives us this extra like kind of tension where you're like looking at the clock and like, okay, I got like 3 hours left. I think I can do this. And you like try and like push for a little bit more and a little bit more to see how far you can get before you have to reset
mm-hmm.
and go back right. to the beginning. And yep. I got all the way to the boss key.
This exact
oh, man.
Thing happened to me the first time I played the game.
Yeah, yeah, I got to the boss key, and I had maybe like 40 game minutes left
in
the day.
Excuse me, I actually got to the boss.
Really?
Yeah, and was fighting the boss. And I was like, I'm not sure I like this whole mechanic. Like when it happened
well,
to me.
But I do like it though. Like yeah. I knew going in that like. I'm risking lost time because, like, you know, when you go back to the beginning, you lose items. So I knew that if I didn't make it, I'd right. have to do some of this over again. And there are things in the game that will, like, kind of trigger. They have, like, these little Majora's Mask logos on them. And then, like, when you reverse time, that stuff will still be there.
Mm-hmm.
So there is stuff like that. So it's not, like, 100% redo. So I knew that, like, you know, it wouldn't be that bad. But still, like... It's kind of like that risk and reward thing where you go into it knowing that you could just have to do it all over again, but you want to try it because if you do it, it's pretty, you know, intense.
Do you want a hint?
Sure, why not?
Have you been talking to like the scarecrow?
I don't think I've seen the one dancing scarecrow yes. in the observatory.
Okay.
Yes.
Actually, I'm not sure that's the one. Actually, I'm not even sure this is a hint. So this okay. is this I can tell you this with impunity, but
sure.
but. Play the Song of Time backwards.
Play the Song of Time backwards.
Yeah, play the Song of Time backwards.
Okay, I'll try.
And there's something if you... The other nice thing about this new version is that I think it's if you play each note twice in the Song of Time, you can skip to not just day or night, which you used to just be able to skip to day or night, but you right. can skip to, like, the hour that you want to.
Okay.
Which is, like, again, it's just, like, a convenience thing and, like, a time-saving thing.
Right.
Not necessarily making it... easier on like one way of thinking difficulty wise but
yeah it wasn't common back in the day to allow that kind of freedom, but nowadays like with fast travel and
yeah.
just like, you know, people like respecting players' time a lot more, like they do that sort of thing often, and I'm glad they did. The saving anywhere thing though is a little weird, don't you think? Because mm-hmm. I mean, I'm glad they did it now because I already beat the game once and I don't feel like I need to experience it like again.
Is if it, you take up the save, it disappears, one of those kind of saves?
I don't think so. I don't know how it works because I've only
I didn't know you could save everywhere.
I mean,
I thought you could just save at those little save points.
Yeah, but I mean, in the old game, saving was very limited, and it was even more limited in the Japanese version. They actually changed it from N64 Japan, N64 US, but like
really?
Basically, it was less. You know, the time was more. There was more of a sense of urgency, I guess, because like, you know, the time
right.
was kind of like if you didn't do it, you really got to do it all over or whatever. But
right. Well, yeah, I think part of it now, it being portable too. I mean, they're kind of hamstrung maybe a little bit because
you can just close your
yep. system, but
yeah.
then if your system runs out of power, then
that's,
you're screwed.
That's
what
I've been doing. Like
yeah.
if I need to just pause, I'll close it. The problem is that like when I'm at home, Haruki wants to play it.
Yeah,
and like. If
tell him to get his own 3DS.
Basically, yeah, he'll like
just give him another demo and tell him it's a full game.
No, well, what I did was thanks to John for selling me his copy of Hyrule Warriors.
Ah, nice, the Japanese one. Yeah.
Haruki, like,
is that your limited edition super pack? Thing?
Just the game itself,
the
not
game
the
itself.
not the good stuff inside
the DLC.
The pack.
Worked by the way, so we downloaded.
Oh, good.
It. Nice. But yeah, like he John sold me his copy, and
so you can mash buttons on that
basically.
All night.
Basically, and like when I gave it to him yesterday, he like freaked out, like N64 kid, like oh my god, he was like screaming, running around.
What
the
was
house.
The occasion?
Wow.
You're gonna spoil him. Is this
well, his,
like,
his
hey,
birthday was
Tuesday.
A couple of weeks ago.
Oh well.
Well, is this his birthday gift?
It's part.
You-
yeah. We can. This is
it's
like
part
the,
of it?
This is month? Like the end of birthday. Yeah, we'll just put it that way.
I don't know.
So, but yeah, like so, like sometimes Jewish he'll wanna. Yeah, it's a Jewish thing.
Wait, so, I want to hear what Thomas thinks.
Yeah, go ahead, yeah. Thomas
or Tomas. Should we be saying Tomas? No, should we even try?
You should just say Tomas. It's okay.
All right. We won't try.
Well, actually, I'm not a big Zelda player. I've played many, many Zelda-likes, such as Alundra, Soul Reaver, and stuff.
Okay.
My first Zelda was Wind Waker.
Okay.
So,
for GameCube?
For GameCube. Okay. Right. And it was really amazing. Then I played Twilight Princess, and I don't know. I didn't really like it.
Yeah. A lot of people were lukewarm on that. Yeah.
So I just discovered Majora's Mask, and I think it's pretty amazing. What I wasn't expecting is the fact that it's very dark, you know, it's sometimes it's like you're in a kid's nightmare or something.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I mean, so, the sound when you
changing
put
the
on
mask.
The
mask, when you put like the mask, it's horrifying.
Yeah, it's like a weird drug trip nightmare almost. Like the visuals too, like they're very surreal and trippy.
Yeah,
and
it is.
It's a super dark game. I mean, literally too, it's kind of dark. Like a lot of the time the game is just like dark colors and a lot of
red. What I find also very interesting is the fact that you have most of the NPCs of Ocarina of Time, but they have all different functions, different lives, different jobs. For example, like the two witches from the desert in the Ocarina of Time here, they're just like, one is selling potions, and the other is just making like boat trip around the swamp.
Right.
And I thought it's really nice to have one of those games where you can like rediscover the characters in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's kind of like a remix almost.
Well, because it was born out of like necessity, right? Here take all the assets and make a game in a year.
Iwata asks, says like you basically they were like,
why don't
we make
just
a game?
We should just read the Iwata asks.
I know. You make a game in the game in a year, and they're like, okay, we'll try it.
Oh, well. That didn't quite work out, but so you're digging it?
Yeah, it's really, it's kind of hard for me since my Japanese reading is very slow.
And you're playing Japanese version.
Yeah, I'm playing in Japanese, but the fact also that there are many, many, many NPCs, and I need to take notes of what they're doing. Fortunately, there is the Bomber's book, notebook, so I can know what they're doing on the first, second day and stuff.
That's huge,
but I'm still like meeting many different people all around Clocktown, and then there are different like little villages all around Clocktown, so I'm still discovering the game, basically.
Mm. Speaking of discovering games, that's what we call segue. Gaijin Hunter.
Oh,
let's talk about Monster Hunter 4 and your quest to bring Monster Hunter love to the masses out there. Where should we start? JJ, you've been playing it. Roy, you've been playing it.
I don't have an American 3DS.
Okay, forgot I said that. Roy, you've been playing it.
I have been playing it, yeah.
I've been playing it.
John, you've been playing it. All of us kind of played it quite a bit.
Yeah,
already.
Yes. Out of necessity, we have played a lot of it.
Me, by far, least of all, though. So I'm actually really looking forward to digging in on this version.
Yeah, I envy you because I would love to go into this English version fresh.
I wouldn't exactly call it fresh.
Well, not exactly fresh, but like
I spent a year of my life working on this game, and we all did.
Right.
And so we can talk about this now. We haven't been able to until the game came out, but yes, we worked on the localization for this game.
Yes.
We're with our friends at Capcom. We're super proud of it. We didn't actually do everything to this game. Those guys did more than they normally would because this game has more than it usually does. The basic breakdown for people who are writing a book about 8-4 is that we handled all of the
write this down.
Yeah, NPCs.
All of you guys out there.
All the NPC text in most of the game, and
all the new characters.
I think all of the new armor and weapons and items and blah blah blah, and like a lot of random stuff. And Capcom handled rewriting and fixing like a lot of the legacy stuff, which there was a ton of. Mm-hmm. And some, I think, of the new characters in the second, like the latter half of the game. A lot of the stuff that was new to Ultimate from Japan, 4 came out, and then 4 Ultimate came out.
Right.
And we were working on it before Ultimate came out. So anyway, shout outs to those guys. Those guys did a ton.
Yes.
They were, they super went to bat for us a lot on the game and with the team. And you know, understood. We were all doing it as like a labor of love. I've been super happy to see people out there enjoying the localization.
Yeah.
To the extent that they're even mentioning it in reviews, which we're always like, that's always super exciting.
Yeah.
And people taking screenshots of
people really
stuff
like the doodle.
They like the Guildmarm. They really like the Arena Bambina, which is awesome. We kind of had a feeling that they would. And also, actually, we should give a shout-out to Brian Gray. Pretty much comes up with all of those things. All of the character quirks and stuff like that are almost all from him. A couple of them, I think Capcom changed a couple on their side, but... and his dialogue is just awesome. I mean, we do way less changes to that stuff than we normally do on his on anybody's stuff. With his Monster Hunter stuff, this one was just really came out awesome, I think.
There's some pretty good quest names in there as well.
I'm pretty proud of those.
It's a good team. I mean, you got Crispin as well as our super friend of the show, former EGM bro of ours. He's works on these games with us too, and he's just super funny guy. Like, the team that works on this, and I should say, like, I didn't work that much on this one, finally. Like, I worked a bunch on 3, and I did a shit ton on 3 Ultimate, but I did very little on this one. So it's awesome for me, because I actually get to see it fresh more than all of you guys. Like, I really didn't even see much of the story at all. So, like, I'm actually reading a lot of it like a noob, and it's really funny, and I'm really enjoying it. But the team that works on this for us is just, like, the perfect mix of, like, that special brand of humor that I think, you know, works really well in Monster Hunter. You know what I mean? It's just got a lot of quirky, like, lots of silly puns, lots of weird in-jokes and, like, toilet humor and stuff. And, like, it all just... That whole team coming together.
Now you're making it sound like it's like a...
Well, you know, there you've got... What was the thing somebody tweeted at us? It was, There was a quest called, like, Nocturnal Commission, and,
that's not toilet humor.
Well, okay, maybe that's a little... It's classy toilet humor.
Right.
But,
toilet humor. Yeah, that's better. It's like an ESRB designation.
It's really fun to work on the Monster Hunter games, though, because, like, people, you know, probably didn't realize it back in the day, but, like, the game doesn't take itself that seriously in Japanese either. Like, it is full of, like, silly humor and quirks and stuff.
So. Right, and obviously nobody... plays Monster Hunter for the story. I think that's pretty safe to say, but I really think that this one is like a lot of the other stuff in Monster Hunter. It's like the same basic premise that you've gotten in previous games, but, like, ratcheted way up. So, you know, you have different towns and villages this time that are all really different, like a ton of characters, just a huge cast of different characters. Monster Hunter games have always had, like, a big group, been ensemble casts, but this one is, like, even bigger. The story really, like, builds up and leads to a really big, I think, satisfying encounter.
Some cool actual, and, like, story-based missions this time around.
And there's actually a lot of stuff, there's more story happens in missions, there's more time spent on tutorials. I guess this kind of leads into starting to talk about gameplay. So, Adam, you're obviously the expert here. You played
how many hours?
Yeah.
See, I haven't played a lot, in my opinion, but on Monster Hunter 4...
In your opinion.
Not yet. I'm getting there.
It hasn't only been out, since October here in Japan, so...
Oh, I think he's talking about in general.
Yeah.
Like, over the whole series.
The series I played quite a bit, but when you say 4G, I think sort of like 4 and 4G, because for the West... That is 4U, right? It's the two games at once.
That's right. We never got the regular.
So when I think of the amount of time I've put into Monster Hunter 4...
How much time do you play Monster Hunter, Adam?
Serious?
Answer the question.
Four?
It's at 950 hours.
Okay. See, that's
not that much.
It's not that much. But you know what? I probably... A few hundred hours I didn't save. I've been working on guides and testing stuff, and I just don't save my game. So that inflates it a lot more.
It's only like 700.
No. Like, on the other end. Like, I played it 950 on my save file, but I probably have over 1,000 easily.
Oh, you just don't save it because you don't. Oh, okay, all right. Well, so, in your small amount of time that you have played the game, what are your impressions of this game over, for people in the West that have maybe played the last one or maybe haven't, what would you say to them about 4 Ultimate?
So I'd say, I mean, one disclaimer, like, I know there's a lot of the hardcore fans in the West came in during, like, Freedom Unite, right?
Yes.
So I am not from that crowd, so I have no way to compare it to that. So
How did you get started playing Monster Hunter?
I got started with you on the podcast talking about the Jen Moran fight.
Oh, okay.
And you were talking about this huge monster on this boat, and and you're chasing it, and I heard that. Heard that, and I said, oh my god, I gotta give this an honest shot. So when 3G came out, I bought it, and I said, I'm gonna give it the honest shot. And I put in 8 to 9 hours, and I hated the game. And I was going to sell it, And I was absolutely, I was like, this, you know, it's probably just not for me.
Right.
And then literally the day I was going to sell it, I was telling a coworker who wasn't playing it, but he had played it in the past. And he said, and we went out for lunch and he says, okay, you explain to me what the game is. And I told him, he's like, no, it's not an action game. Why are you thinking like, no, you've got the wrong idea. This is a hunting game. So he tried to explain the loop to me better. He tried to explain just the basic approach. So I went back and I gave it another 2 hours. And then on the third hour, the hook came and it got me and
you figured it out.
Still in your
and
ass.
And 3G
right now.
Was like 1,200 hours I put into that.
Right,
like that was. Just...
Wait, John, I thought you had something to do.
He missed the
Were
first step
friend?
Of all this, where you tried the demo and didn't like the demo. And I'm the one who talked him into buying the game.
Okay,
yes, that's right.
He was like, I was like,
I
trust me,
this.
You did not. You just need to play
right,
it more.
Right.
And they did, and he still wasn't totally hooked.
Yeah,
because before this, we knew you as a kind of like obsessive compulsive gamer type, like a person who 100% new game plus mode and things, and I think that's why John.
That's why I was like, this game is perfect for you.
That this is a game that you would be into. So, what is it about? Before I guess we get into for you, what is it about Monster Hunter that you love, like that keeps you playing that much?
I mean, I guess the same could be said about the Dark Souls games, which I haven't had the chance to play, but the idea that you walk into the game and everything your character can do. They can do from the very first minute you start playing, whether you put in 1,000 hours or 2,000, they don't level up at all. It's you as a player who levels up. So you can go into it. I mean, yes,
well,
you get
do
better,
level up.
Yes, you get better
Souls,
armor and you get better gear, but if you went back to that same hunt with the same weapon with yourself 100 hours later, you're going to get half the time and you're going to clear that quest because you've really, really improved.
Yeah.
Like, you understand the monsters better, you understand the weapon better.
So it's all about,
It's just transformation, like a personal transformation you go through. And you can feel it, and you can see it, and it's just, it's deep. I mean, it really is.
There's a good article that came out, I think it was on Eurogamer, talking about how Monster Hunter does loot right.
Yeah.
And it talks about other games, and one of them is Destiny, but it talks about a few other games. And you know, one of the things that we talked about on this podcast before is you are doing a lot. It is a very repetitive game, extremely repetitive game. But the depth there is such that, you know, these bosses, to take Destiny as an example, and I love Destiny, but like, and there is depth to Destiny bosses in that you learn just different ways to like beat them and do stuff like that. But I mean, this is like a real knockdown, dragdown fight with these monsters that are animating in all kinds of crazy ways, and they're all kinds of little tells and all kinds of behavior that you're not even perceiving that you're picking up. Yeah. It's just like if you actually spent a summer like feeding bears at the zoo, you would start to get an idea like that bear is angry and like I'm not gonna, you know, you would just start to pick up all of these things that just walking past them at the zoo you don't get. But as in Monster Hunter, you get that with all of the animals, and it's super cool and fun and thrilling, and you're doing it and get to show that off in front of four of your friends.
And one of the things that article, and I read it, I really liked it, but I think they even failed to mention, and I don't know why people don't mention it more, is that even if you have a game that says, okay, I want you to go and kill this monster, get this loot, make this weapon, it's a sense of accomplishment and whatever, but you can actually see the items that they tell you need to do to get to make the weapon, you can see them incorporated in the visual design of that weapon.
Yes.
So it's
very
not like, oh, you want me to get three of these just because it's a task.
It's an arbitrary, like...
But no, like, if it takes a lot of the tails, you can see the tails incorporated into the actual thing that you made. And so it doesn't feel like the game is forcing you down an Excel sheet.
That's the other thing, too. Like, depending on your play style, there are just a ton of different options in terms of weapons and armor that are all, you could argue, equally powerful. But it's not like, oh, everyone has the best weapon set. Okay, like, now I can finish. I'm done with the game.
Right.
It's like, oh, this guy must be doing that quest a lot because I can see his armor is built out of.
You're wearing your trophy,
and it's incredibly
well-balanced. You're wearing your trophy, which is exactly.
People have likened it in the past to Street Fighter, and I think that's the best analogy I've ever heard for like Monster Hunter. Like, the different weapons are kind of like Street Fighter characters because they are super balanced, but they all have like different, they all feel like the different game in their own. Like, I'm a hammer guy. Every game I've mainly played with the hammer, but
hammer
when I've
bro.
Had to try other weapons, I'm hammer bro. But when I've tried other weapons, like especially when we're working on the games and stuff, it is like a totally different game with almost every single weapon.
Let's talk about the new weapons, actually.
The
insect
charge blade.
No. We guys, let's talk about the insect glaive.
Oh, okay.
We got to start with that because that's the one I think people see and they're like, "Holy shit, I want to play with that!" Because you're pole vaulting and you're like shooting out your kinsect, and you're gathering essences and doing all that kind of stuff. What should people know about the insect glaive.
Okay, well, I get...
just like a high overview. Okay. We can't get too crazy deep. Though people will go into your videos. We'll tell about your YouTube channel. But just like high overview kind of thing.
So the insect glaive is fun in that it's sort of like you have like a stick bow. And you've got this little insect. And the whole idea behind it is that as you're fighting big monsters, you send this insect straight out towards the monsters, towards like their head. And it grabs like this extract, this juice from its head. Right. That makes you more powerful. You
insect.
You hit its foot. It gives you white power, which makes you move faster.
White power.
That sounded
wrong. Just keep going.
If you hit their body, you get orange, which is defense. And then what you do is you take these three colors and you sort of combo them together and you buff up your hunter. And where you start out as just a cool hunter with a stick and you're twirling it, once you start buffing yourself up, like, you become this just mad machine. And you can jump at any time during the game. So if there's any monster you want to mount, anything that's in the air, that's no problem for you.
So if you're teaming up with any I like to call it the Bug Bow, but the Bug Bow players, you just see them jumping up in the name, I think. Jumping over and over and over.
Yeah, I love watching like acrobatic players playing with that thing.
You
can
tell when someone had just started out playing the Bug Bow.
Because they're jumping and they're missing.
They're just like, it's just like, you know, stay on the ground for a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's, like, actually fight the monster.
And you know they totally designed that weapon because the game was meant to be, like, vertical and have mounting and jumping and everything. What would be a fun way to, like, just be able to flip around the game?
Roy, what is your weapon of choice these days?
I always go into Monster Hunter kind of like, what do I feel like using on this enemy? So I don't ever...
Hardcore.
Like, stick to one weapon.
Okay.
Wow.
There's tens
check low check like water.
It's
a good way to get mileage out of the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Play all 14.
You don't want to concentrate on one weapon and get a sweet
jack of all trades.
Get a sweet weapon.
No, because
I got this awesome new, you know, charge blade or whatever.
I think that's the wrong way to approach the game. Like it's it makes sense for people that don't have a lot of time and maybe they're just like, I just want to see the credits roll or something. But like John was saying, every time you change your weapon, it's like you're experiencing a completely different game.
Right.
And for me, it's like if I'm starting to like lose interest in the game, then I'll just pick up a new weapon and it's like, holy shit. Now I love this game again.
You kind of mastered them all. Like to anyone, it's not even like you rush through the game if you just play one weapon. Like, you could play hundreds of hours with one weapon and still be learning, like, okay, this is how I should approach this monster with this weapon.
The way I'll play is I'll go to get pretty much every hammer in the game, and like near the end, I always have like a little notepad where I'm like, I've written down, like, because you know they branch out. Like, you'll get a weapon, and when you upgrade, the branches that you can upgrade, they branch out is what, and you know, so
you can't return back,
right? So by the end, I'm usually like, okay, I gotta start with four of these, which are gonna spread out into like these five directions, like to get all my and I have like, and that's how I actually enjoy the end game, is like it's like a checklist of like things. Okay, I gotta go this way to get this weapon, then once I got that, I gotta go this way.
Yeah I'm the type that kind of like I main lance, but like towards the end of three U, like I started playing greatsword and hammer. Now I do hammer too, and like it is really fun to just try other things, and like some monsters are easier with different weapons.
Absolutely,
like, if you're a lancer and you're fighting against Tigrex, it's not that fun.
Well, also, like, correct me if I'm wrong. It's
Let it go. You said Tigrex, right?
Tigrex, yes.
Like, that's a classic example I give of why you want to use a lance.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, because you can block.
I do like it for charging monsters.
Even guard lancing him is like a walk in the park. It's like walking a kitty. I mean,
well, see, like, I don't really guard lance. I do. Evade lance.
Well, even that.
Really
weird. Oh, interesting. Well, I mean, you know, but it goes into say about the depth, like the way that you play a weapon.
I can use a weapon, and
I go, this is kind of hard against this monster, but someone's got a different approach that just makes it really good for them.
Which is
great.
It can be a very different game playing with other people, right? Obviously, than playing it solo. Like some of the weapons are more built for support or are more like kind of solo guy friendly.
It's super rewarding when you play with people who get that stuff too, because then you have a team that like understands how to play well together. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I have a hammer guy, I know he's going to be focusing on the head, I'm going to stay out of his way and do other stuff while, you know, whatever, like different weapons have different specialties.
I want to add in a disclaimer here just really fast for anybody who hasn't played the series. Like, you hear people who have played it talk a lot about like this weapon good against him, there's lots of things to do, lots of weapon paths, but don't get the wrong impression that it's one of those things where you need to go that deep in the game. I think you could still pick it up and still have a lot of fun.
It's weird. Like, it's
if you want to go deep, you can.
It's weird because I want people should be. It's almost like Dark Souls. Like, you should be a little intimidated.
A little bit, yeah.
But enough to know that, okay, I'm not going to get this immediately.
Yeah.
But not so much to be like, oh, well, this guy's played it 1,000 hours. I can only play, like, a couple hours a week. I'm just not going to pick it up.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It can be a very, very fun, rewarding game just a couple hours a week. But
yeah. You
do, in my experience, have to make that 10 to 15, probably, hour investment. And things are getting better, especially with, like, your videos and, Roy, your book. Mm-hmm. Things are getting better in explaining things to people, and now you've got, like, you know, Monster Hunter Reddit, and they're, like, super friendly on the Monster Hunter Reddit. It's been awesome to see those guys, how friendly they are to newcomers, answering questions, doing that kind of stuff. It's better than ever in that respect, but just the game on its own has some, like, olive branches to, like, tutorials and, like, hey, do this, and, like, you know, even the first mission in the whole game is, like, very exciting, which is not always that way in Monster Hunter games. It starts off with a bang, like a big bang. But so it's better than it's ever been, but compared to your most games, you do want people to know coming in, okay,
there's that depth.
It's going to take a little investment, but then the fun comes in, and, like, doing it with friends, if you can find a friend, and now with online.
Yeah, anytime, anybody's your friend, right?
Are you guys playing online a lot?
I play online a lot.
Okay, I saw you streaming,
and I play with random people, mostly, believe it or not. So I actually have a lot of fun with random people.
Who are you streaming with? I saw you streaming on, like,
Oh, okay. So I don't actually do the streaming, but I do love. I have recently discovered Twitch TV.
Yeah,
and I had I had not discovered it until recently. Yeah, I
you
was
know
like
that's streaming, right?
I guess it's like I'm in Japan, so, like, people look at that as, like, it's just not a big thing here, right?
Right.
So, well, they have Niko Nama, but
not yet.
But I mean, like, Twitch is great. So, like, like, there's people like D. Yoshi or Melf or Kogath or the team podcast, like Cthulhu, like, they let me jump on their streams and play when we were doing 4G. But now that they're on 4U and we've become friends through Twitch, like, they'll, like, invite me on Skype, and I'll just be on there watching and just talking.
Oh, okay.
And
I chilling heard your out voice, with, yeah. I didn't see you on the
just chilling out with the guys. It's really fun.
Yeah. That was cool to see people playing the game because I guess that's another nice thing, really, with the rise of Twitch and stuff like
they
that.
They did a 24-hour stream.
I know.
That's crazy. Wow.
Because you're not used to, like, 3DS games, you know, most people
want a 24-hour stream of, like, just Monster Hunter?
Uh-huh, and the same guy.
Oh, nice.
Like, launch day. Yeah.
I think it was Diyoshi. Awesome. He went 24 hours. I don't know how he did it.
Yeah.
I just told him, don't become a headline.
So, what else? What else should... what else to say about 4U specifically?
Yeah, so 4U, like you were saying, like, it's really accessible. So I think if someone... Like, when you first went into 3G or 3U, like, you had to do a lot of fishing quests or delivery quests, and there was a lot, right? Like, I mean, you still have, like, a few of those at the very start, but they're very scarce.
Yeah.
And you almost never have...
There's actually a joke about that in the
yeah.
game.
Yeah. We don't mess with tradition.
Right, yeah.
They're not required, too. Some of them aren't required anyway.
But, like, not many. So, I mean, getting in there and hunting monsters is faster than it's ever been.
Yeah,
They added in a couple of monsters that are before, like, the Jaggy level, so you finally get the you fight a big monster, but it's not, like, so daunting that you die over and over again.
Yeah, and I do like the training missions that they have against the Great Jaggy. Yeah. So you pretty much what it is you get 14 missions on, like, when you first start the game, saying, okay, let's hunt a Great Jaggy, and all it is just one area. They give you a bunch of text tutorial. But then you go in there, and they provide the armor, they provide the weapon, they provide the items.
It's like Freedom Unite.
It's only like maybe like a 3 to 4 minute hunt. It's not bad at all. And it's got a little bit of the ledges you can play around with. And it's just it's stress-free. You can go in there and just try it out, compare times,
and
compare
everything.
And finally,
if you've got a new 3DS, you've actually got a nub to control the camera with.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's definitely going to make it a lot easier for a lot of people to get into it.
I didn't start with, like, Freedom Unite, so I never clawed. I never played on the PSP. So
Because
that's not my way of doing it,
yeah.
And the target camera is how I do things. Like,
I just use a target camera. Wow, yeah.
It's hard not to. I mean, I use the target cam now all the time, too. You will if you play more, though. I know. I mean, I think if you, like...
I just like the... I'm a first-person shooter. Yeah. I come from a first-person shooter. I would never
use
the target
camera.
It's just
how you... It's muscle memory. I don't know. Something, right?
But, yeah, it could be muscle memory a little. It's just like you can stop thinking about that and focus on other stuff once you get used to it, which is weird, because it changes... I feel like, in a sense, it's... it's nerfing the game a little bit, right? It's making it a little bit easier by taking that part away from you. I love the claw, man. I still think like the claw was the best way to control the
camera.
You
can still do it with touchscreen.
You feel dexterous while you're doing it.
The touchscreen.
You
kind
of do the touchscreen. But
I didn't think I was touching the C-stick on the new 3DS much. I was like, I don't think I'm actually using it.
Yeah, and then I kind of have to train myself off of it, actually.
Yeah, you go back to the old one, and I realize, oh, I'm not using it to move the camera left and right, but I'm using it a lot to tweak it up and down.
Right. Interesting.
And I have a lot of fun just doing small tweaks so I can get better field of vision, because I kind of like an upward, kind of downward view.
So as a high, let's talk like high level play now. We talked about a lot of stuff towards beginners and whatever. I'm curious, like, how much do you use some of the new, like, how much in levels are you mounting monsters? How much are you, like, climbing up stuff and jumping down on things? Like, how much of the new features do you actually use in high level play, and how much of it are the new weapons do you use in high level play, and how much of it is like, oh, well, that stuff is cool, but high level play, you just don't worry about that?
Well, I think that the way that they worked in the verticality is sort of that it's almost unavoidable. It's always there. It's always fun to use. It's never a stress or chore to do. So, like, it's not something where if you want to do it, you can do it. Like, you're going to do it. It's just, it's part of the gameplay now. If you want to go really high level play, like people, like the speedrunners, they view that mounting is bad. They say that, you know, they can get quicker times if they just pound the monster. But those are the guys who fight naked and, you know, flawless hits solo. So that's a different
character
world.
Character naked, not themselves. Yeah.
Possibly both.
Could be both.
That would be interesting.
That'd be a good stream.
But like high level play, like, just like, you know, like good high level play, like, yeah, mounting is great, especially if you're online, because, and I guess I should give a public service announcement, because everyone is just dying over this one, but if you see another like hunter mount a monster, stop attacking.
Like, I really wish they would have fixed that in G. Like, that was a problem, a real big problem in the original Monster Hunter 4. Well, just make it so the monster takes more hits before you fly off of it.
Well, that would, it would break this, it would break the system.
I mean, that's a good, like,
But the thing is, like, there is, like, yeah, sure, if the monster's not moving around, then I can see, like, that's free damage, that's kind of unfair. But, like, there are plenty of times where the monster's just, like, flailing around and you just want to run away.
Anyway, just don't attack the monster.
So, like, it's like, dangerous. It's a risk and reward.
Like, don't attack it, because if you cause it to flinch, like you're about to break off its tail, or you've hit its leg enough time and he's going to flinch and fall over and trip on himself. If you do that with a hunter on top, it's going to throw them off. It's going to make them feel horrible. It's going to destroy the entire rhythm.
Embarrassed.
Just seriously, like, take the time to, you know, sharpen your weapon, heal up. I mean, even go into actions and, you know, clap, I don't dance, prance, like, you know, position yourself. Get ready.
One thing that's awesome that they added in Ultimate now is if you do hit somebody into the air, they can actually turn that into an attack, so you can actually attack. So now getting coup de poncho, which is what we used to call it, which is when like somebody knocks you up in the air, is not totally useless. In fact, some people even use it like on purpose. They'll like hit people up to try and get them set up.
There's
for
a pretty
drop.
Cool animated GIF where these people are playing like volleyball with a hunter, where they like hit each other back and forth,
It's pretty another
cool.
thing,
I mean, oh, go ahead.
Oh, another thing that I think is really helpful is there's a system where you can set certain phrases for when things happen in the game. So, for instance, when you mount a monster, there's like an expression you say automatically. So you could have it be like all caps, do not attack monster, just sharpen, please.
Right. There you go.
Which is what I do, yeah. I wrote like rodeo time, stop attacking.
Yeah.
Rodeo time.
Rodeo time. Yeah, nice. So those are fun to set up. You can have fun with those.
It feels so good to like actually land one of those. I know, like you say, maybe the pros are like mounting is time wasting or whatever. But like
I do it all the time.
The other day I was just I was
just sitting there shivving it right. Like
there's that too. But I like violent. I actually you like as opposed to mounting, just like the jump attacks you can do from above. Like I had it's a new move for the hammer, obviously, because you didn't have it before. But I had this like. I was charging my hammer and did a jumping attack off of a ledge onto a jaggy and just
pounded.
You feel it, man. Just smash the shit out of it. And it felt so good.
Well, being able to jump off a cliff literally and on the very bottom, 500 feet down, slam a monster right in the head.
It was especially if they fall down or something after that, it feels good.
Oh yeah.
He won the match. Like he just like took him out like completely. It was
amazing. And Hammer has the most powerful of all the jump attacks actually.
Really?
Yeah, it's really powerful, so I can use it, abuse it, love it.
I love that the only other weapon that has a standing jump attack is the lance.
Lance.
And like I abuse the shit out of that. It's so fun to just run up to a guy and be like,
One thing
right in the butt.
I remember from us working on this game, and this was something that Roy, you came on right as we were working on this game, and that was, you were a big help.
Thank you.
Was the nuance to the buffs and debuffs are kind of crazy. I mean, the amount of depth and thought into the systems that control the game and how they're affected by different armors and different things that you might eat and potions and everything in the environment, like, it's pretty staggering, and just also adds to, like, the amount of, like, depth discovery that you can do into this game, you can put into this game, you know, like, there's so many different attributes and roles that you're not thinking about. Just like when a monster hits you, you know, how far it throws you, how long you roll, how long until you get back up, like, all of those things are, like, things that the game and the designers know about and are considering. Like, it's pretty daunting when you're working on it, that's for sure. Absolutely. Because, like, you could completely understand Japanese 100% fluently but still not get all of the nuance. Sometimes it's not even explained in the Japanese. Sometimes we took pains to kind of explain it better in the English if we could, but even just keeping it straight was, like, a huge challenge.
So one thing I wanted to talk about a little bit with you, Adam, is, like, you've kind of become popular lately for these videos that you do, and so you went to Akihabara and basically modded your 3DS, right?
Yeah, like, so
you
had, so this is, like, every, like, there's only a few modders in the world. I know there's, like, two in the West. And there's two here. One is this kitty K cat.
Somebody
or something like that.
Must be doing it, though, because you're seeing streams, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, they're doing it, but they're doing a lot of them.
You can send your system to them and they'll mod it.
Yeah, so this K guy does most of everybody's. Like, I can't remember the full name, but apparently he's so backed up. Like, it's like a month or two sometimes.
Wow.
And so I was reading on the web, and I saw that there's just this local guy in Akihabara who he works with one other programmer. I think they make the chips and they write software to streaming onto your computer and everything, and he's got a shop in Akihabara. So I took my 3DS and I went there, and it's actually, I guess, talking about where it is kind of pointless, but but we go there, and he's called Optimize, and it's just like this little second floor on, like, one of those buildings.
The store is called Optimize, or himself?
He
like
slash
Optimize.
I don't know what it's called.
Optimize Prime.
That's what I thought too. Like, sounds like a Transformer.
So he, you know, you walk in, and it's like one of those, like,
hackers, like, yo, Optimize, we got a job for you.
Like the plan.
But seriously, it's like one of those, like, closet, like, how did they fit a building here kind of ideas. Like, you get on there, and it's literally like one room, and it's not even like the size of the average bathroom. It's a small little place.
We are in Japan.
Yeah. And there's all these chips and wires and, like, all these really techie things all over the wall.
Yeah.
And this very sweet, docile looking 60-year-old woman, probably his mother, standing behind the counter. I'm like, am I in the right place? Oh, I've got to be in the right place. And then I walk over to her, and she's very sweet, and she's like, okay, oh, you're here to mod your 3DS. Would you like the type that takes out the infrared unit or the one that doesn't? And she's like, oh, dear, this is a limited edition Gormagara one. Are you sure this is the one you... We're going to have to put a hole into it. Are you sure you're okay with that? I think this woman knows her stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, and it was... I paid... It was, like, the equivalent of $200.
And so now your thing can't do Street Pass anymore, right?
No, or I could...
what was it? You said you'd remove something.
I removed the infrared unit.
Which means
No, Street Pass is an infrared because you put it.
No,
in
it's
back
not. Yeah, you're right. So I can't do. Oh man,
is it just like local?
All right, well, there's something.
I'm missing it.
So, it's probably some sort of DS feature.
Yeah, so they don't have it for the new ones. It's only for the old 3DSs.
Okay.
They just don't exist yet. They have to.
They haven't figured it out.
These guys have to make it and all that stuff. So, and then I get a call 2 days later. Oh, your 3DS is done. Oh, okay. So I walk in there and it's all packaged and wrapped very beautifully, almost like, you know, like the. Like your grandmother would wrap like a present or something. It's like really well done, really
again,
nice and sweet.
Yes.
And she's like, here's your thing. Here's your password to activate the software to capture your unit.
Oh, wow.
You know, and she's like, I
that's
hope
how it works.
You know,
crazy.
I hope you're happy with it. Yeah. And boom, that was it.
And so it connects to your PC via what?
Yeah, like, so in the back of the unit, on the other side of where like the charger is, there's now a very nicely clean, almost professionally clean like hole that has a micro USB.
Okay.
So they solder on a micro USB port inside the actual motherboard.
I see.
And so then what it does is it does
you
video
use the
out.
Actual 3DS as the monitor and it records.
No. So I take the micro USB and I plug it into the computer, and then there's a piece of software that this Optimize guy has, this guy who's called No Name. I love that.
Nice.
That's humble like can you get, right?
Pokemon,
Optimize
right?
And he writes a program that just allows you to just have your video. Okay. And it streams it in there, and then you can record it, and you can do stuff.
It looks really good.
It's really nice.
Is there a delay when you...
No, it's full.
I watched him the day he got it. He brought it out to Otaru, and he was messing with it, and I saw it, and it is perfect. That's why I was really curious about
it's
it.
Really
like,
nice.
That's pretty cool.
If you ever wanted to stream 3DS, this would make it super, super fun to do
like
so.
Streaming, there's,
so
there's a delay if you do streaming.
Not streaming,
stuff,
I mean,
but like
videos.
But it's really nice.
But so you have this video series, though, that's now gotten really popular, and... You have like a lot ton of YouTube followers and everything, and you're like the guy lately. All of a sudden,
I've been
rising star of the Monster Hunter video community.
I'm really welcome.
Yeah, I'm really happy because I mean I've been blogging about Monster Hunter.
Yes,
you know, since 3G.
Yes.
And I had a few hundred people who would always follow and just listen to me ramble on about stuff I was excited about, which was nice. And then you know, once 4 came out, I started getting a little bit more serious. Once I found Tumblr. And I started like posting pictures of all the events I went to and talking about stuff and writing articles. And the articles were more for me than anybody else. It's like, how do I understand how how stunning works? And I would do the research and I would do testing and I'd learn a lot. It was almost like a homework project. And I'd post everything I found and some people enjoyed it. And then I said, okay, well, I'm going to get a capture card. Like, I want to make an actual video. I think it'd be fun. And then I did it, and then, you know, I made my first video was actually my most popular one right now, which is the Charge Blade tutorial.
Okay.
And at that point, I only had maybe, like...
to be able to see relative popularity of the different weapon videos to be able to tell what people, everybody kind of knows most about.
Yeah. At that point, I only had maybe... I had a YouTube channel that I just putz around with a little bit for a while. Maybe 50 people were following me at the start of January. And then I started...
Pathetic!
I love these people, they're all good.
That's a joke.
And I made videos, and then
build up, so you had your rise to stardom, and now
Now it's I'm getting about 1,000 new subscribers a day. I'm getting
there. You go.
I just celebrated 1 million minutes watched a week ago, and now I'm about to hit 2 million minutes watched.
Nice.
Well, so,
and in no time you'll be
tens of hundreds of people listening to you right now. So
and then
get
Polygon,
ready for dozens more.
I was surprised. I got a shout out from Yuri from Capcom Unity.
Yep.
He mentioned me in an article. Then another great shout out was Polygon wrote an article about me a few days ago.
Friends of the show,
which was really nice, and that was a great thing to wake up.
That was
up
Phil
to.
Kohler. Yeah.
Nice.
I was like, oh wow.
And that was right after I tweeted about you, so I think it all comes back to A4.
Phil Kohler is also a friend of Monster Hunter from back since 3, I think. So
he is, and he's always been very fair, I think, in his reviews. And,
yeah.
And he had a very positive review, and I think kind of nailed the reviews. Have actually, I think, been. I mean, they were super positive to the point where I was...
They're really good.
Surprised, like, how positive. And I think it's half the game getting better and half people's way of thinking coming around to kind of starting to understand the game better, which is cool.
I'm always marvel at the fact that, and this is even from back when we were in the media days, like, I knew this as a writer, so I was always careful, but, you know, it's really obvious when people haven't played the game enough that write a review.
Oh. Right.
I think they don't get it, but believe me, the people who know the game know that you're not doing your job. Like, so, like, when people do that, it's like, oh, okay, well, I don't have to worry too much because this guy didn't play the game enough.
Is there a specific review?
No, there are. there were some.
There are those, too.
There are a couple, but then there are others who just have like fair criticisms, but it's like okay, well, this guy obviously put his time in and had developed a valid opinion.
But we should actually move on because we have a ton of news and stuff. I mean, we could talk about Monster Hunter, and we will talk about Monster Hunter in subsequent episodes since we're all gonna be playing it. But like, do you want to summarize thoughts on for you, Roy and Adam, guys who've been playing it the most?
You want to go first?
It doesn't have to be some grand thing. Just
speech.
Just say a few things.
I think it really is, as far as Monster Hunter games go, it's the most approachable in terms of understanding how the weapons work, understanding how all the elements in the universe fit together, and also like presenting a story that's engaging.
Right.
So and Adam was talking about the vertical kind of
experience.
Verticality. Yeah. It all comes together to, I think, like a really great package. Like, probably the greatest Monster Hunter to start with, I would say.
For sure, yeah. Definitely. That's a total given, yeah.
Then I would say that although games like this have kind of like a grind, because, you know, you want to fight the same monster several times, you want to get parts, there's random cars, whatever, because of the verticality, the increased overall speed, I think, of both the monsters and the hunter, and just the overall feeling of the game, the pacing is faster in the actual hunt, so they're more exciting. And I think more than any other time I've ever felt in Monster Hunter, no two hunts are the same. Unless you are in a heavy bowgun room and you are spamming monsters.
Right.
Like, no two hunts are the same. Like, and you really are always on the edge of your seat, and there's always something crazy going on. Fun scenarios to talk about when you're going out with the guys, like, oh, when I chopped off, that happened. Like, it happens all the time.
That kind of stuff, and I think we haven't talked much about it, but, like, the sense of teamwork, like, the thing that I like the most about that game is the thing that I like most about Destiny, specifically the raids, is, like, everybody has a job to do, and everybody is, like, a badass and knows exactly what they're doing, and, like, pulling that off, and, like, something goes wrong, or something goes unexpected, or a barrel bomb doesn't, like, something, you know, runs away from the trap, or flees, or, you know, something happens, like, and how everybody reacts to it, and then, you know, like, helping and supporting each other. I do wish that the game had more stuff to do for support class people, like pure, like, in a normal game, it would be, like, a spellcaster that doesn't even really, isn't attacking the monster, but is just supporting and buffing. So
I think at
that
point,
you have, like, hunting horn, you have, like, the bow gunner people and stuff like that.
Cry.
But it's not,
I think
it's, like, every class, it's all about how much you want to contribute. If you want to do damage, you can. Then there are the classes that have some support, but
you can support while you're kicking ass.
I don't think there should be one that is all support.
No, I'm not even saying all support, but there should be a heavy support class for people who don't want to mix it up, who want to just come and play that. There are people who really like
Sword and Shield, wide range.
Staying back,
sword and shield,
helping, and just supporting from the back. Yeah. Anyway.
But anyway, I would just say, like, as I always say, like, Monster Hunter is like jazz. It's four soloists coming together. So everything that you do when you're alone in your room and you're playing or whatever is going to make you a better hunter, which helps you contribute better when you go on and play with other people. It's just a beautiful experience.
Well, but said. If you're a longsword user, don't fucking come into my room just and start slashing all over the goddamn place.
Did you say
do, man?
You see, in my tutorial, I showed when I did the longsword tutorial, I did show me whapping some random Lancer online, telling people, try not to do this.
Don't do this. Yeah, I'm Lancer right here.
Sorry to that random guy I did that.
All right, maybe that was you, JJ. But let's take a quick break and come back with the news. Stick around.
Mark, can you give me the news song?
News. News.
Well, now I know how it feels.
Sound like a defective JJ.
That's my JJ impression.
Okay, thank you very much. A lot of Nintendo news.
Yes.
This episode.
Yes.
They had their investors meeting on the 17th.
Yes, Iwata's feeling better, apparently.
Yes, he feels better. And it was kind of no real big bombshells.
Yep.
We did get a little information about Amiibos.
Yeah.
They're selling like ridiculous in America. 63% of all Amiibo sales are from America, apparently.
Wow.
Lots of Zelda love.
They're shipping them into Australia, apparently, because Australia can't keep enough of them. So they're importing them from other regions.
Yeah. Japan, not so much.
Australia had like 90% sell-through or something crazy like that, right? Like, they're just like...
90% of their shipment was sold through.
Well, it doesn't help. I was just at Big Camera before here, which is an electronics store.
Yeah.
And the Amiibos were literally next to dryers. I'm not joking. Like they had these home appliances, and they had the Wii U and the Amiibo section right next to each other. I'm like, yeah, that's the right way to sell it, guys.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Like, Disney Infinity didn't really hit here, which unfortunately I got a copy of that, and I can't find a toy anywhere.
No.
But
thanks to friend of the show,
yes, Shane Bettenhausen. I also got Little Big Planet 3, which we're enjoying.
I think they'll pick up, though. I think they'll get more popular. I think the problem is they haven't really done a good job of explaining to people, in Japan, what they are and why they're cool.
11% of all Amiibo sales are from Japan.
Well, the funny thing is they've explained as much as they have anywhere, right? And they're just not doing as
here. I just don't think it's really, like, the collecting figure thing is...
Part of it could be there's no artificial demand here because they actually sell them in every store for everyone to buy.
Well, is it artificial demand, or is it just not a lot of being sold?
Hold on. We just got done talking about this fucking coffee promotion where you can't find the things because people are running out and collecting
I don't think that's why you can't find
them. Thomas actually asked and found out that they just didn't get any of them.
They just didn't get them.
Who didn't get what?
The convenience store. One of the convenience stores.
Oh, okay. So it's not that they're selling out.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
those
yeah.
promotions are incredibly popular.
Yeah.
Like, promotions are all super popular. There is a huge, like, collecting all of the things culture here. It's just a matter of...
Because they're limited and people think they're going to be gone if they don't buy them. And well, I think that's exactly
that's
it.
What's pushing Amiibo everywhere.
Everywhere else. Right. Well, that's exactly what I just meant. Japan.
They're getting the same message that everywhere else.
But I can go on Amazon and I do, and that's why I have like every cool Amiibo. I just go on Amazon and boot pre-order and I get them. Whereas in America, you got to go to Target or you got to go to GameStop or you got to go to Toys R Us or
but
Walmart.
But it's like a chicken and the egg thing because you can do that because nobody's buying them. Yeah. But you're saying nobody's buying them because you can do that.
Well, it feels like they're going to be available forever, and I think it's also this whole idea that it's next to a game, so it feels like it's complicated. I don't get it. Do I need to have a game?
Or that came up in the investor meeting, right, was that people thought they were too big and too expensive.
Yes, some
like
of the
leading to like more like capsule sized little things that are right. You see more of.
I can kind of see that.
Maybe there's something to that.
I don't know. I mean, Japan not so great. Apparently, Link is pretty much the most popular amiibo everywhere outside of Australia. Next would be in Japan. Kirby.
I wonder if that's because they made enough, though. Come on, like, I mean...
A lot of people like Link. Maybe Amiibos will start selling more when Nintendo releases this thing later this year, I guess. In the first part of the year, Amiibos will be able to unlock free NES and SNES time trial demos or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like little
portions of games,
parts
like
of games.
I don't know if you guys played this in Smash Brothers. Smash Brothers has like a game, like history area, a game museum area where you can play like famous parts of games.
Mm-hmm.
And this is basically that.
Sounds like sort of like NES Remix had some levels that were pretty simply that too, right?
It'd be cool if it was like that. It was like a NES Remix style thing.
Yeah, here's
could be cool.
Here's the final Battletoads level.
They didn't say what games will have it or anything, but it sounds like a good idea. Here's why Nintendo didn't launch the smaller new Nintendo 3DS in North America. The core audience we weren't at. This is Damon Baker, senior manager of licensing and marketing Nintendo America, from an article on Polygon.
Okay.
The core audience, we weren't going to win them with that decision, the decision not to release it. But we had to think about the expanding the user base. We had to be able to market it and make it easy to pick up for consumers. So they thought
that what? Maybe two SKUs would be
too confusing.
I mean,
I don't buy it.
It does sound kind of weird on the one hand, but on the other hand, it is weird in the first place that one has exchangeable plates, one doesn't. Like, but the other markets are figuring it out.
On the other hand, did you see my Majora's Mask cover plate? Because it is.
Well, I mean, if you take it in the reverse, like Japan doesn't have the 2DS.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, some people might want that.
Oh,
that's kind of weird. Along at the investors meeting, they also have a Q&A, a famous Q&A, where shareholders get to ask really funny questions.
The English version's not out yet, but it will
English
come out.
The English version's not out. A couple of interesting factoids from friend of the show, Kyle McLean, at Farm Boy in Japan.
Just kidding.
Let's see. Yeah, well, what Mark mentioned, when Iwata first showed off Amiibo, Japanese distributors told him that they were too big and too expensive for Japan.
Maybe they were right.
Maybe they were. The QOL team, remember QOL?
What happened to that?
Apparently reports directly to Iwata, and they are their own independent division outside of the gaming division. So
shadow organization.
So they're still making stuff?
It's like the little embryo that might become...
Hardware and software people, right? From other parts of the company.
And apparently, the Amiibo shipments being low and the shortage or whatever is due to apparently a port strike on the West Coast. I hadn't heard about
this. At least partially, maybe.
Partially,
right? They said it doesn't affect games because games are not as heavy.
Yeah, because games can be flown
over.
And
they ship them, right.
Yeah.
I don't know why you can't fly over Amiibos, but maybe
a lot of Amiibos
are
really...
Actually, that's probably why, because they're relatively cheap.
Port strike. What are you going to do? One of the reasons Iwata announced the QLs because too many people internally at Nintendo thought Nintendo only makes video games. That's kind of weird.
So he's like, "Fuck you! We're gonna make some weird shit that out of left field just to prove that we don't just make games."
Vitality.
It's weird. Well, yeah.
What's the weirdest thing we could make to get people to think that we don't just make games?
Butt plugs.
But what's wrong with that? I don't understand why that's an issue.
What do you mean?
that they only make games. That's cool. Nintendo makes games.
Yeah, I mean, he probably wants to encourage, you know, them to think bigger and freewheeling. Apple's making a car, man. Come
true.
On.
Good point. Iwata's thing was that he stressed that Nintendo went from Hanafuda cards to toys to electronic toys.
To love hotels.
We heard that before.
Yep. Okay, that's
all right. Moving on.
What else we got?
What kind of express news today?
Creators program. Yeah, whatever. They're having problems. Nintendo scraps efforts to... Oh, yeah. Hey, guys. When was the last time you used TV? Do you know what TV is?
TV with two eyes.
Two eyes.
Never, because... Never. No one.
Well,
no one
apparently knows. It's not coming out in Europe. Sorry, guys. This is kind of interesting. Nintendo was trying to make Harry Potter games. Back in the late 90s, Nintendo of America was trying to make, get the license for Harry Potter to make Game Boy Advance, GameCube, and Nintendo 64. Yeah, it does. I really wish they would have, because the Harry Potter games were not good.
Thanks to Polygon.com for that story.
Yes, most of these are from Polygon.
Unseen 64 has some concept art from the game, including Nintendo's reported take on Hogwarts. Check that out.
That would have been cool.
I love that site. Follow them on Twitter. They're awesome.
Netflix and Nintendo developing a live-action
legend. Oh, my God. Please, no.
It's not confirmed, though, right?
It's not confirmed.
From a Wall Street, but it is from a Wall Street.
Well, it's confirmed, It's confirmed that it's not that it's happening, but that it's in discussions and that there's, like, you know, research is being put into making it happen or whatever.
But still not... I mean, that's, like, according to, like, a source or something, right? Like, it's still not... Mm-hmm. It is the Wall Street Journal, so...
I hope it's true, and I hope they go, like, the Jim Henson route with, like, the puppets and, like...
No.
Practical effects.
No.
There you go.
Yeah.
That would technically be live action, so...
Yeah.
Puppet action.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, this is a terrible.
Please don't ever let that happen. It's the worst idea ever.
No, it could be.
There's a really funny
Netflix has a good track record right now.
Really funny, actually, IGN video about this announcement. Like, watch it. Brian Altano did it. I don't want to ruin it, but search his Twitter feed or whatever the day it came out. It's really funny.
Cool.
All right. Nintendo's working on an app to bring your Miis to social networks. Nobody's going to do that.
Afterburner Miis?
What do you mean nobody's going
to
do that?
To bring your Miis to social networks?
Yeah, they are. Are you kidding me? You could put your Mii as your icon. I bet you, like, a billion people are going to do
like
that,
like, a billion 10-year-olds will do that.
Dude, that I guarantee... Let's all come back to this when it happens.
Yeah, John's right. I mean, okay. At least for the first while, like, when it first happens. Yeah.
It'll be like, you remember those cartoons people had on their Facebook? Those really unfunny, like...
Yes, like, ugly,
but if you don't,
South Park shit. My God.
It'll be like that. Everybody's going to be doing it for a week, and then it's going to go.
If you don't suck at making Miis, like, and you do good at making Miis, like, it's people are going to do it for sure.
John's just trying to lay the path because he's going to do it, so he wants to make it like it's a cool, acceptable, okay thing to do.
Hiroko made my Mii. She's good at Mii making.
She is
terrible.
Incredibly good at.
I thought you said Afterburner Miis, by the way.
Oh well, that would have been fun.
Yeah. Which would be cool.
Apparently, 3DS XL sales are doing pretty good. New 3DS XL sales are doing pretty good because they're picking up. Wow, that's somebody's phone, Mark.
And there is no normal version. That's a test. That was a test, JJ. You failed.
Nobody's talking
if the
about
rings
it.
Rings or anything happens, you no keep right. going. The newsman never stops.
It's on the mic.
Nobody's talking about that 3DS XL new 3DS launch, by the way. But like, it came out with Monster Hunter and Majora's Mask on the same day. Like, that's an amazing launch.
And it's doing really well.
Amazing.
It's funny. I kind of briefly read the investor Q&A before the podcast, and someone asks. Why they didn't, because if it's doing so well in America, why didn't they launch in Christmas where they could have totally taken advantage of it? And Iwata had like this super long
a warehouse full of the old hardware.
Please understand.
Also, let's remember when the 3DS launched, there was Nintendogs and Steel Diver and garbage.
Well, Steel Diver came a little bit after, but
please understand.
Did it?
Nintendogs.
Let's see. The 3-day timer in Majora's Mask was originally set for a week.
Yep, other Iwata asks, we already talked about it.
Fire Emblem's going to have a 25th anniversary concert. John Yellen.
Zelda concert was amazing.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, yeah, you guys went to that. How was it?
There's your nickname.
Brief
could have talked about
minute.
That. It was awesome. It was amazing.
Freaking amazing. Like, it was so good.
It was being streamed on Nico Nico, but you had to pay, which is just like Japanese YouTube, but you had to pay $20. And the going there was pretty expensive.
Yeah.
And John was nice enough to invite some of us.
To get lucky.
To go. And I thought before, like, oh, well, man, maybe you can just watch it at home and it'd be on your stereo or whatever. But once you got there, it's a totally different experience. And interestingly enough, I'd say like probably like 60% maybe more women over
tons of women there.
Japanese Zelda fans, I think, are predominantly women.
Really?
Yeah, there's kind of like the whole like boyish
Joshi. Is it also a game concert thing? Because when I went to the Lost Odyssey Blue Dragon, it was like 70% girls.
I was thinking if I was like a single guy, I probably would have found my wife that night. Just like a giant hall full of Zelda fans.
Yeah. Well, sounds like fun. All right. Final Fantasy 15 demo will let you explore, cook, and fight Behemoth.
Okay.
You guys excited for Final Fantasy?
You can cook Behemoth?
Yeah.
Wait, you get to cook Behemoth?
No, I think you can cook and and fight
there you go.
Behemoth.
See, that's not as exciting. Headlines is very important.
I just read it too fast, I think.
There you go.
I want to cook Behemoth.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, in sequels nobody ever wanted, nobody ever asked for news, Square Enix is ready to hear your pitch for a new Gex game.
Yeah, which I don't mean, they're going to make some mobile game. This is viral marketing for some shitty mobile game.
Who is the dude in for Gex again?
Dana Gould?
Wow. Yeah, is he still alive?
I don't know, but like my dream Gex sequel is like... It's like this weird ass game where someone comes up and licks Gex and has like this fever dream. He's like a poisonous whatever.
All right.
And it's just like this crazy ass trip through.
Let's keep
Square
going.
Square Enix is looking for your opinion.
Dissidia Final Fantasy is going to have an arcade game.
That was interesting.
Yes,
news.
Actually. So they have a video of this.
Yes.
And it does not look very good.
Really?
No.
It looks like it runs like on the Final Fantasy 14 engine. The graphics are cool. I don't know.
It looks like it runs on a PS3.
System 22.
Well, any love for the arcade is good love.
But that is, I mean, I'm excited that they're doing it, that they're doing an arcade game, and I think it's cool. It's like three player, right? Or something like that? 3-on-3, maybe?
Yeah, it's a fighting-ish, well, I mean, obviously it's Dissidia, but...
Fighting-ish?
Yeah. Because it's like a, you remember Psychic Force for the PlayStation?
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
Yeah, right. It's like a free roaming fighter. I don't know what you'd call that exactly. Yeah.
Sony says The Last Guardian is it that time of the year again?
Yeah.
Sony says The Last Guardian still isn't canceled following trademark.
Because the trademark expired.
Yeah, the trademark expired, and apparently the lawyer, I don't know if he got fired because of this, but he doesn't work at Sony anymore.
I think it's a she.
It's still in development, guys.
What's the over-under on that being at E3? I still believe.
It's a new live-action series for Plus.
I believe.
Sooner or later, I'm going to be right.
I love
every trade show.
I love the Star Trek DS9 GIF where it's like the year 2700 and something. E3 conference ends and he's like, "Where the fuck was the Last Guardian?"
Wouldn't it be cool if they did Half-Life 3, The Last Guardian?
Oh, that would be hilarious. Leaked playthrough of The Order 1886.
Yeah,
suggests talk about this. Let's just keep going. This is the whole short game thing.
Nothing wrong with short games.
Nothing wrong with short games. But at the same time, there's nothing wrong with knowing how long a game is before it comes out.
Sure.
Yeah. Like some people that's a factor for some people's buying
being
decision.
So entitled.
Yeah, exactly.
Personally, like if I play 5 hours of a game, like I'm happy. But
If it's a good 5 hours, whatever.
But then again, I don't know if I'm going to pay $60 for 5 hours.
There was the same thing with Rising, Metal Gear Rising.
No, exactly right. It was a huge and then with Ground Zeroes, it was a big thing.
And JP Kellums came out on Twitter saying some pretty righteous stuff about how like you know game length doesn't matter. It's what you get out of it.
You know what though? This goes into the whole dropping review score thing because I remember him talking about that, and he was talking about like numbers in general don't matter or whatever. Blah blah blah. They do matter to some people, and they help some people
in different ways.
So like
publishers
not,
get bonuses based on Metacritic. It's a fact of life, unfortunately.
Okay, that's a whole nother fucked up different thing. But let's not lump
the situation
together.
Is really shitty these days. Like it's totally because numbers. Yeah, if they are like done properly and responsibly,
review
can be
score,
review scores would be really helpful. But a lot of people seem to be ditching them because they can't manage to get it. You
we
know.
Shouldn't. I want to have like a long discussion about
sure.
like, but I want somebody on the show that's going to argue in favor of getting rid of them because it seems like that's most of the internet and I totally don't feel that way.
I agree with you.
So really I'm surprised.
Even though you refused to give an EGM score to JJ's
games. Well, we're not done yet. You'll get one at the end.
Okay, PlayStation Store's bestseller in January was Resident Evil HD. People still like that game.
Yes, it's not a 20-year-old game, by the way, people. It is not a fucking 20-year-old game. The original Resident Evil is 20 years old.
Yes.
This is Resident Evil
that's a good
Remake
point.
HD. Yeah. It's not a 20-year-old game. Stop writing that.
Maybe 15.
Do your job.
It's
about 15 years.
In a rare Microsoft news article we have on the show, Phantom Dust
They're
Reboot Studio. Yeah, the studio that was doing the reboot for Phantom
and of course
Dust.
It's good news.
Yeah, I know. Report apparently got shut down. But the game is still in the works.
It was being
That's not good news. Nobody likes a studio being shut down.
But it was being made in Florida, which is also not great news.
Good luck to those guys.
But good luck to those guys.
So I don't know what that means, though. Like, the game's still being made. Is that good?
It means that it sounds like they're moving it to a different developer. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, maybe the story of that will come out
soon. Maybe Rare will make it.
There you go. In your Apple Utopia news, Apple fights the man and...
this was interesting.
Starts a new category called Pay Once and Play.
I love it.
Play.
This was interesting.
Make a normal video game.
The last 5 years, maybe.
Yeah. I think it's pretty cool that they're like singling these games out. I think it's about time, you know... Right now, the App Store is basically free games.
They make Minecraft. As much money as anyone else off of the big free-to-play games. But still, it is good of them to be pimping this because it's important. They're trying to not let the market fall out from under.
It kind of feels like it's fading away on iPhone. So a good big push would be
right.
Very you've nice. Been moving.
Okay, it's all right, John. We'll go ahead.
Me? What? It's not me.
No, I'm just
it moving.
The role of John this week is played by Mark. Attack on Titan Arcade. Being made by Capcom. That could be cool.
Really? I did not know that. What kind of game?
They don't know.
It's weird that arcade games still get made.
Yeah, well, there was weekend, there was a... They used to have JAMA and then another arcade show here in Japan twice a year.
CA or something.
Something like that. Well, they merged them to... Now it's called, Jayako.
JAMA Bamba.
Jayako. And it was last weekend, and it was pretty big, apparently. It was, the biggest arcade show in several years.
Moving on. Then.
So, Yo-Kai Watch is still coming. That's
sure it is.
It's going to come out, you guys, sometime.
What happened? Did something get registered?
Somebody picked up the anime rights or something, or what was the deal?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
Sure.
Persona 5 trailer. Who saw it?
Wait, so did we talk about that last time?
No, it was an hour after the podcast.
Right, it was an hour after the podcast got recorded.
Did we talk about that? Oh
it
my god,
looks
that's
so
ridiculous!
Good.
And I'm not even a Persona guy.
No, me neither.
Yeah. And the UI, the UI looks amazing. Just the UI itself.
This shit is so stylish.
Just play around with the menus.
Dude, Persona 5 had that amazing trailer. The next day was the Xenoblade X Direct. JRPGs are. Freaking I'm doing it right now.
So much, probably too much from that trailer tied up in Persona 5 because it's really well edited and there's a lot of snippets. But to me, that's Japan doing its own thing, confidently and feeling itself and really fucking swinging for the fences and kicking ass doing
and
it.
And it takes place in Tokyo.
And it takes place in Tokyo.
Near our office.
You can see the Shibuya station
in
the trailer.
I hope it's good so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah,
me too.
It's probably going to be good.
It's probably a good track record.
Yeah. This was kind of interesting to me because it had been off my radar ever since it was announced. But Dark Souls 2, Scholar of the First Sin, apparently is going to have... It's almost an extra quest, basically, because...
Really?
They're all new enemy placements.
In the whole game?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So,
but only if you buy the full pack or whatever? That's the full pack.
When you get this new upgraded version for PS4.
Okay. Yeah. Wow.
I'm kind of actually interested to try that out.
I didn't play Dark Souls. I mean, more than 10 minutes, I didn't play Dark Souls 2 because, I had only finished one late, and now I was I'm just going to play it on PS4. So I'm excited.
It's second quest of Dark Souls 2.
Yeah, second quest of Dark Souls 2. I said that pretty much. apparently there's a new enemy called the Forlorn. Who, chases you throughout the game. He's kind of what's the guy
idea.
From Resident Evil 2?
Nemesis.
Nemesis. He's kind of like that.
Nemesis isn't his name. He's
Bill. I think his name is Bill.
Is Bill?
Bill sounds about right.
Ah, Bill.
Oh, well, he's a tyrant. Mr. X, I think.
Hey, Mark. What do you think about becoming Bungie's lore master?
I'm into it.
I think they need one, but I don't think they have any lore to really...
No, this guy just got hired.
Oh, did he get hired?
Yeah, from Guild Wars 2, John Ryan.
Oh, okay.
Really?
Yeah, he's the new lore master.
Nice. Good luck.
Up the
lore master.
That's a thankless job. Jesus Christ. Good luck, man.
Activision made a lot of money. Titanfall sequel probably in the works. What does that mean, I wonder?
That is kind of funny. I mean, the first one did not do anything near what they were hoping, but did not do horrible.
That would be really interesting if there was no Titanfall 2. But,
well, this is supposed to be the one that goes multi-platform, right?
Yeah.
It's the one that
Peter Molyneux got eviscerated.
Oh my god. Yeah, let's not talk about that.
I wish we could do a whole podcast on that.
We could. Yeah. That's why I don't want to. I don't think
John,
we
are you
do
a pathological liar?
I'm not against talking about it. I just would want to give it the proper amount of time.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Fascinating subject, though.
You guys are going to GDC in a couple weeks.
Yep.
Valve is going to be showing off the latest Steam Machine devices. You should go check them out.
Hope they're cheaper and less ugly.
Apparently, the controller, I think the final controller is going to be there, so you guys should definitely pick that up and see how it is.
It's made of lasers.
Well, chances are you guys are going to be seeing those guys anyways. 9 million people watched 90 minutes each of Awesome Games Done
that
Quick.
That is fucking awesome.
Yeah, that is really great.
These guys, probably compares really favorably to like seasons of popular TV shows.
Yeah, no, that would not surprise me if it did. Bethesda is going to have an E3 conference. Ooh,
possibly Fallout 4.
So yeah, why? I'm guessing you're going to probably see a Fallout 4, maybe a new Elder Scrolls.
I hope they at least tease an Elder Scrolls. They're probably only doing one or the other, right?
The non-first party press conferences are always great for how terrible they are.
Oh,
so
God.
At least we have another one
Mr.
to look forward
Caffeine
to.
And laser tag.
Yeah.
Extreme,
yes. Richard Garriott, his new RPG is approaching 6 million on on Kickstarter. Okay. And our last one, I think, John, you're really excited about this one. Underworld Ascendant.
Yeah, Ascension.
As a Kickstarter.
We talked about it last time.
We did?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Well, right now they're at
473K.
They're almost there. They got 15 days left. I think they'll definitely make it.
It looks
good.
They
need some help, though. Let's not... We don't want them just to hit their
initial
goal.
Yeah, we
want
to make this game really good.
Yeah, and this game really deserves it. I mean, check it out. If you're a fan of those games at all, please do. Some friends of ours are helping out on it, but before we even literally knew that at all,
I
we talked about
like
it last
day
time.
One.
Yeah. I don't know too much about the series or anything, but apparently it's pretty amazing. So
it was good back in the day. I mean, it hasn't been around for a long time, but the people who made it have a really good pedigree. They know their stuff. And it is kind of a style of game that diverged and kind of headed over into Skyrim territory, so I'm kind of curious to go back and get a new take on it from the people who basically
they kind of gave birth to the genre.
Yep. All right. So like that's it. That's all the news.
All right.
We went through that really quick. Okay.
7/7.5, which is really good.
All right.
That's like really good.
Okay. Is that like the like 2000-ish EGM scale or like the 90s EGM scale?
That's my Mark McDonald EGM scale, which stayed the same since time immemorial.
All right.
That was like the sort of slightly above rent at the time. Not like drop, you know, if you can afford it, buy it, but don't drop, you know, don't like not buy your girlfriend a birthday present, buy it or whatever.
It's
sort
like,
of
it
like
does a lot of really interesting things really well and is definitely more than just whatever, but there's still some rough edges for them to work out, and like sequel
it's
is
like
gonna be bad. Sequel could be, it says ones that shitty reviewers would end with like, but I really can't wait for a sequel, or like blah blah blah.
Yeah, okay.
Sequel's gonna be awesome. That said,
fans of
next
JJ
podcast is gonna be amazing.
Yes, we're gonna have Jon Snow, his last podcast before he goes back to Canada.
Show.
Yeah,
keeping the French connection going.
And it'll be an all-star thing, just so you know. Sarah's gone. She's in America. She'll be back the episode after that, if you're keeping track.
For her fans.
Yes.
Rest of our fans, where can they find us? Let me say my Twitter name and then leave, because I really have to go. At Mark MacD.
All right. And John, you want to tell the lovely people where they can find us?
Look us up on the web, www.8-4.jp, or on Facebook, 84Play, Twitter, 84Play, or our individual Twitters. Mark just gave his. I'm John TV.
At Kotowari.
I go by two names, either A. Ivanko or Gaijin Hunter. Find me on Tumblr or YouTube or wherever.
We'll put that in the show notes.
Too. Okay, nice.
I'm Thomas Cooley at Twitter.
How do you spell
good
that?
Good luck with that.
TOMACOULIS.
All right. And Hiroko.
Hiroko 84. I was here the whole time.
Yes, you were.
Sure you were.
And you didn't see him, but Jingo, do you want to give out your...
Mine's is easy. Jingo Bingo.
Okay, Jingo Bingo.
And you have no idea who that was, and JJ, just Mark walks out the door 2 seconds, and JJ's already breaking rules.
That's okay. that's
we'll hear from Jingo in a future podcast.
Yes, next week. Or next episode, rather. And so that's it. Adam, why don't you take us out?
If you're on the fence, you owe yourself to get Monster Hunter 4. And if you want Monster Hunter 4, get the new 3DS. It's the definitive way to enjoy it.
All right, there you have it.
There you go.
Gomenasai. My name is Ken Sama. I'm a 27-year-old American otaku. I draw anime and manga on my tablet and spend my days perfecting my art and playing superior Japanese games. This Gaia, Final Fantasy, God Hand, and so on. I train with my katana every day. This superior weapon can cut clean through steel because it's folded over 1,000 times and is vastly superior to any other weapon on earth. I earned my sword license 2 years ago and I've been getting better and better every day. I speak Japanese fluently, both Kanji and the Osaka dialect, and I write fluently as well. I know everything about Japanese history and their Bushido code, which I follow 100%. When I get my Japanese visa, I'm moving to Tokyo to attend a prestigious high school to learn more about their magnificent culture. I hope I can become an animator for Studio Ghibli or a game designer for Square Enix. I own several kimonos, which I wear around town. I want to get used to wearing them before I move to Japan, so I can fit in easier. I bow to my elders and seniors and speak Japanese as often as I can, but rarely does anyone manage to respond. Wish me luck in Japan.